T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Time to talk baseball and everything sports. It's Live with Mike, sponsored by Goodwill. Give hope, give local, give Goodwill.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Live with Mike. We're here at the ballpark. Mike Shannon, Mike Claiborne here. Special guest, the two new inductees in the Cardinals Hall of Fame are with us, Vince Coleman and Ray Lankford. And first of all, gentlemen, welcome. Secondly, congratulations.
Well, congratulations, then welcome.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. I'm honored, I'm humbled, and I'm grateful. This is nothing that I never saw in my future. I saw me being a Cardinal player, but not as a Hall of Famer. You know, that's very few, far in between that this honor has happened, and I'm very, very excited about it, and I can't wait till tomorrow.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait neither. I think one of those situations when you get drafted, you just look to go out and be productive and have a solid career. I never, you know, even in spring training and opening day, you see like a bunch of the legends and they're wearing a red jacket. I just never picture myself ever wearing a red jacket. I just always wanted to be consistent and just be known for just working hard and leaving it all out on the field.
Well, and for both you guys coming up in the organization, this is the first organization you were part of.
Yes.
That had to mean something to you as well.
It did. You know, coming from California, kid coming out of Southern California, I knew about, you know, Willie McGee and, you know, Vince, watching these guys just do their thing.
When you were a kid?
When I was a kid. He's a
little bit. A little bit older than me.
Not much, but
you jumped and clapped and fell off your big wheel.
I know, right?
But no, you know, watching Vince do his thing, and it was like, you know, watching him steal bases, man. It was like he was running on air.
Tell us that story about when you first came up, and Whitey said, "Well, you're just going to be here for a couple of days."
That was very true. I first got called up. It was on a Wednesday. I remember, and it was a day game, and. And Dale Maxwell had stopped me in the hallway, and he told me that you're only going to be here for 4 days. And I said, well, Dale, all due respect, you know, I'm a hard worker. I think I could stay a little longer. Well, Vince, I know you love your attitude. I love your work ethics. But, you know, we don't have room for you right now. You're still a little green. You need to go back to the minor leagues. I said, okay, well, I'll let that take care of itself. So the first night, still, four bases against Pittsburgh, and Tony Pena is supposed to have been the best catcher in baseball, and 4 nights led into 5 nights and 6 nights. But I do remember going to on a first road trip. And here it is, the first road trip, and I was the odd man out, meaning that normally rookies have to share a room. But C.J. Cherry, the reason why I won Rookie of the Year, because he said, well, as long as you keep stealing bases, I'll take care of your room. So that means I have to pay for my half. So
I remember those days.
You mean you guys weren't making that $10, $20 million?
Oh, no. Minimum was dead. You can barely buy. Yeah, that's why I hung out with Oz and Willie every day. You know, they can buy me lunch, you know.
I remember those days you had to share a room.
If you got the wrong roommate, man, somebody couldn't sleep at night.
Oh, my God. Yeah, right. If you got the wrong roommate, especially if it was messy.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Wasn't good.
All right. But I have a presentation here. You know, I mean, you know, I was a manager down at the fantasy camp, and my bench coach was there. And I just want to present him as my most valuable player, because I couldn't have done it without him. You know, he's very valuable. So I want to present him with his ring tonight on stage. I was going to do this tomorrow on stage, but I'm like, no. I think tonight will be a little better.
You want to tell the whole story of how I got this ring?
Wait a minute. Didn't Mike get one
off
at
the air, maybe? Yeah.
Well, no. I got off to a little bit of a rocky start, right? And then I had to go on the cruise. And as soon as I went on the cruise, they started winning. And so Vince texted me, said we won, and we voted you the most valuable player. So I finally got my ring. And I really appreciate you bestowing this on me because you were an inspiration to me. I'll put this one next to all the other ones I have.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
And I'm glad you did it tonight instead of tomorrow.
Oh, you guys are on stage tomorrow. Huh? And by the way, you only get 2 minutes.
Two?
2 minutes, yeah.
Okay. I know my wife and I have been talking about how long it should be, and yeah. So.
Do you have your speech already?
I ad lib, you know. I just get up there and just go where the spirit takes me, you know.
Well,
yes, I have my speech together a little bit. My wife and I have been working on it.
There's
trying to think of the right things
on.
To say. I mean, there's so much to talk about,
and
so
who
many
to
people
thank
to thank,
and
all that
kind of
great stuff. You know,
there's a little pool going on who's gonna cry tomorrow.
Who's going to cry tomorrow?
You know, I've been crying writing my speech, so I know.
You know what?
I mean, so.
I got news for you. You were the favorite. You were the favorite. Yeah, so that'll be fun, though.
I mean, my heart is, you know, bleeds red. You know, I struggle with the fact that I didn't retire as a Cardinal. I regret leaving, but that's hindsight. But, you know, it's a team, a city that I thought about every day of my life. You know, being here, you know, so and this honor here today is tomorrow would be overwhelming for me.
Well, it's nice to hear that from former players, because to show the kind of respect that you have for the organization and the uniform. All right.
Correct.
And there's a couple of things in there that we're lacking in our society. And that's you hit them both on the head. You know, there's not much structure and there's not much discipline, but. In a situation like this, you're talking about respect and some other qualities that when you go to look at organizations now, you don't see much of that. You guys both have it, okay? And that's, right. You know, that's something that you don't run across very often. I don't care what industry you're in, whether it's baseball or any kind of sport or any other industry. If you work for Boeing or whatever, you know, it's who you, you know, there are two things that are really important in life. You know, your religion is one of them, then who you work for.
That's true. Yeah. Right.
Hey, for you guys, being on the ballot obviously was an honor, but what was it like when you got the phone call? Who called and told you were going to be members of the Cardinal Hall of Fame?
Bill DeWitt called me. And when the phone rang, you know, I knew it was a Missouri number, but I didn't know who it was.
So somebody he looking
me.
For you.
Yeah, I was like, okay, who's calling me?
You got the wrong
rate. Hey, that's a good one, Mike.
That's only because you know.
Well, if it's a number you're not familiar with, a lot of times you kind of say, well, they'll leave a message.
Yeah.
And some say, you know what, let me answer this. And it was Bill, and he told me. And I was with my wife, and we were sitting there actually having a margarita. And it was the best feeling. Because, you know, when you get drafted, all you think about is just playing the game that you love and working hard. So now just being honored for that, there's no better feeling.
Vince, what about you?
I had heard, but it wasn't official. I was on the road in Fresno. I was working, and I was playing golf. And Mr. DeWitt called, and I was 200 par at the time, and then I went 3 over.
Wish he'd have called you at the turn.
No, I mean, it didn't matter what I shot that day after I got that word, the news that I was inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Where were you?
Fresno, California. I was working, you know, for the Giants. Uh-huh. You know, I hate to say the Giants in front of the Cardinals, but, nah. You know. I was driving en route down there, and then once I got there, the phone rang, and I was, and he told me the news, and I, you know, tears came to eyes then, so I know I'll cry tomorrow. So
if you want, it's all right, man. That's okay. Don't worry.
All right, let's see. They got you two guys, and then Harry Bukrin, somebody I believe from his family, you know.
Yeah, we met his son tonight.
Yeah. Oh,
in the lobby tonight.
Yeah, so
right.
He's going to give it. He'll accept.
He's a talker
speech.
Too. So he
is that
might
right?
Be a little
well,
man.
I gave the talk.
He's a talker. Yeah. Well, I might need to go before him.
You better talk
order?
To him.
I don't know.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. Ray Lankford, Vince Coleman, Cardinal Hall of Famers, along with the Hall of Famer Mike Shannon, back with more after we take this timeout.
Now back to Live with Mike, sponsored by Goodwill. Give hope, give local, give Goodwill.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here at the ballpark along with the Hall of Famers, Cardinal Hall of Famers, Mike Shannon, Ray Lankford, Vince Coleman, We had a really good chat about a guy who had an impact on your career during the break in George Kissel, and the impact that he had on you. And Vince, you talk about some of the things you learned. You still apply. You applied it throughout your career, but I'm sure you teach some of those things now as a coach.
George Kissel molded me. I mean, he was very instrumental in my life. If it wasn't for George Kissel, I wouldn't be here today. I can remember George coming to me and after 3 weeks of being in Johnson City, and he said, if you want to play in the major leagues, you must become a switch hitter. And he had bought me a pipe, 34 inches long, weighed about 10, 15 pounds. And he said, before you go to bed tonight, I want you to swing it 100 times. You wake up in the morning, I want you to swing it 100 times. He said, I want you to wake up in the morning, brush your teeth, wash your face, comb your hair. I had hair back then, you know.
We all did.
So those things I said, George, you know, in all due respect, I can swing this bat 1,000 times. And it was like July. So it was July all the way to spring training in 1983. I went out and batted 350, you know, and stole 145 bases that year in Macon. But because of George Kissel, he was the heart and soul. We all blessed by having George Kissel in our life. I mean, we lucky, we blessed to be in his presence. If it wasn't for George Kissel, I know for sure it was a lot of us. I mean, I heard Joe Torre, you know, him speak about how well, and that was way back in, you know, during your era in time, you know. So, but I mean, how many lives did he touch?
Well, it's phenomenal, and not only players, but coaches and managers too. When he was here in the big leagues as a coach, I would have people come to me. I'm talking about like guys like Sparky Anderson. Hey, is George with you guys? And say, yeah. He said, would you tell him I want to talk to him? They just wanted to come over and talk to him and maybe have a question for him or whatever. But, I mean, he not only affected the lives of people in our organization, and like you say too, professionally, but personally, okay, how right. He improved your life, you know, by the little things that he taught you and the respect that you had for yourself, you carried on.
Right.
And back what Vince was saying with Kissel, I don't think you could find anybody that could say one bad thing about the guy. He was yeah. a class act. I mean, when I first got drafted coming out of California, I'm in Johnson City, Tennessee, and I'm like, where the heck am I? You know, I'm like, I'm a Cali guy. I'm like, this is a mistake. Why am I here? And it was like, you know, I was a young kid. So I went from there, went to instructional ball, and that's when I was introduced to George Kissel. And he worked with you every day. And he was a guy who would say, you got to put something in the basket every day. You're not going to get a hit every day, but you can throw somebody out, or you can steal a bag, or you can score a run, and do all the things. It was more than just hitting.
Yeah.
It was defense. It was base running. So once you was able to kind of solidify those things, you became a more complete player. And I owe all that to George Kissel.
I'm going to ask you about two other guys that had an impact on your career, Ozzy and Willie.
You wait till tomorrow to hear my story. I can't tell you. But, I mean, Ozzy.
How many of you guys knew of Johnny Lewis?
Well,
he just passed away.
Of course, right.
Yeah.
Let me say this about Willie. Willie, one of those guys, he doesn't say a lot, but he says a lot. He says the bare minimum. Yeah,
right. Quality but, over quantity. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, and that's Willie.
It doesn't get any better than Willie.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel blessed. And have Willie and Ozzy. You kidding me?
Yeah.
That's I was raised without
now,
a father.
You roomed with Willie, right? I mean, you stayed with him for a little while.
Yeah, he took me under his wing. Don't ask me about my speech tomorrow, man. No, I mean, Willie's the ultimate. I mean,
There's no crying in baseball now.
No, I know. Willie's the best. Willie is the best. I mean, what a great individual.
And he still is.
He still is to the day. You know, I mean, I talk to Willie at least once a week. You know, we had that bond. Since then, I can remember when I was leaving, and I laughed. I mean, Ozzy called me up, and he said, Vince, what we have between with Willie and myself and Ozzy was that you would never find in baseball again. And I was young. I didn't understand what he meant at that time because I'm thinking I can go wherever I go. I'm the only child, you know, so everybody's my brother, you know what I mean? You know, I'm going to rub up bows. We're going to be friends. We're going to come to the locker room every day and check our ego in at the door and, you know, have that focus. No, it wasn't the same. No, I played with King Griffey Jr. It wasn't the same. You know what I mean? Yeah, I went to Cincinnati, went to Detroit, Kansas City. It wasn't the same. It wasn't like the Cardinals. There's nothing like the Cardinals.
You should have seen. Did you see the game he had in the 82 World Series in Milwaukee?
Of course. Right. Oh, when he jumped across the wall.
Oh, yeah. He caught that incredible ball and hit two home runs. I mean, he was unbelievable.
Right. What about the day he hit for the cycle in Chicago?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but
with Sandberg.
That's what Sandberg got
all
the
runs, right.
Yeah. Nobody even knows about that because of Sandberg.
Because of Sandberg.
Yeah, right.
You're right, Ray. He doesn't say a lot, but when he says something, you automatically pay attention to what he's saying.
Yeah. Ozzie got a lot of the credit for being this and that, but it was really was a guy. When somebody needed something or when there was something that had to be said, they went to talk to Willie.
Yeah, right.
Because Willie's going to be straight. Not going to sugarcoat it.
Say what, I asked him about a guy one time. You know what he told me? He said, "Be careful, Mike. Be careful." And then he just walked away.
He said, be careful, Mike.
Be careful. And he walked away.
Right.
He started me thinking not there.
Yeah, right.
Because I remember when I was called to the big leagues, and you was in left because Willie was still playing center. Right. So when I got called up, I'm a young kid, nervous because he's in left, Willie in center, gold glove. I mean, how do you replace that? How do you fill those shoes? But I remember when I was in the clubhouse and Willie went over to right field and he said, "Listen, young blood, it's yours now. Just play hard and the people will love you." And that was it. Hmm. That's Willie McGee, that's just the way he was. And just saying that, I was like, okay, let me go out here and do what I need to do to help my team win ball games.
I tell you what, Willie cared more about you as a person than he did a baseball player.
Yeah.
He came, remember the complex down in Florida, out on 67th Avenue or whatever it was?
In Tampa, in
St. Pete.
St. Pete.
I'm in the clubhouse there, and I'm a broadcaster, and this guy comes walking in. I said, "Willie McGee." And how did you know who I was? I just could tell who it was.
Yeah, he's a humble guy.
Right. But because there was a lot of talk about Steinbrenner being so upset when he was traded from the Yankees over to us, and he just came walking in, and Willie, "How do you know who I am?"
Well, Steinbrenner was only upset because how Willie played when he got over here. If Willie didn't play that well, Steinbrenner wouldn't have been that upset. Why he didn't let him go back? I don't know how that thing worked back. You can trade. Loan players out then. Back during
that
time,
I was loaned to the Boston organization in Seattle. With Johnny Pesky was the manager out there. So I went out there, and they said I had to sign a contract to play in that Pacific Coast League. And I said, "Well, I'm not going to sign any contract." And so I'm there in the afternoon. It's dark. There's nobody in the clubhouse except for one guy, Spencer, who had knocked me down the year before. So I went to talk to him. But anyway, he said, "Well, you got to sign a contract." I said, I still got bonus money coming. They said, "We'll write all that in." I said, "You don't know what I'm making?" He said, "No, just sign it." I said, "Well, you want me to write what I'm making in there?" He said, "No, that's all right. Whatever you want. Just." I said, "Well, if you guys are that trustful of me, then I'll sign it and put anything in there you want."
Throw another $5,000 in there.
Hey, $5,000 was what you made. What are you talking about, man? That was a whole year's salary, and then you go to World Series, and it was like you got two paychecks. You played for 7 days, and they gave you $5,000 more.
Right.
Double your salary.
You guys had – Ray, you hold a record for most home runs hit in old Bush, or Bush number two. Vince, you hold a record for single season for most stolen bases. One story, Billy Hamilton. This is great. I think I've told you this story before. So Vince set a record in minors, stolen bases in one season, and Billy Hamilton came along and broke it. And so Billy Hamilton was feeling pretty good about himself. And somebody said, "Hey, you broke Vince Coleman's record in the minors." He was like, "Yeah, that's me." He said, "He broke his leg that year." He didn't. And he never mentioned it again.
Really?
He never mentioned the fact he broke Vince Coleman's
record.
I
only played 112 games.
Really?
I broke a bone in my hand, and I missed 25 games.
And still
but
stole 100?
But the thing 100? About that, right before that happened, I had like 70 stolen bases. I mean, I was on fire. They couldn't get me out. I was begging Lee Thomas, why am I still here?
There's nothing for me to do.
Yeah, I want to go to Double A, you know, let move me. Come on, man. No, 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 you stay here. So I go to the All-Star game. It was my first game back. I go 5 for 5. I steal 5 bases. I drive in 5 runs, believe it or not. And I was MVP of that game. And when I came back, Lee Thomas was there. And they said, well, keep playing hard, keep playing hard. You know, we'll maybe move you. Because I'm in Macon. Mm-hmm. Now, you still got Springfield, and then you got St. Pete. All I wanted to do was go to St. Pete. I knew George Kissel down there, you know, from Spring, you know, Instruction League. And all my boys from A&M back at home.
But if you went there too early, you'd have never got there. You'd have too much fun. You'd have too much fun.
But they did reward me during the offseason. Lee Thomas called me up and said, we got big plans for you. We're going to skip AA, go to AAA, because I want you to be under the watchful eye of Jim Fregosi. Mm-hmm. Meaning that he's going to give you the green light. And that's all he said. So I went from Macon all the way to AAA the next year.
Right?
So.
Let's take another.
What was Macon? Was that A-ball?
Yeah, Macon was A-ball. Yeah. The lower A. You know, you the lower A, right.
Let's take another break. Vince Coleman, Ray Lankford, Mike Shannon, we're all here on the Cardinals Radio Network.
Now, back to Live with Mike, sponsored by Goodwill. Give hope, give local, give Goodwill.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here at the ballpark. Vince Coleman, Ray Lankford, Mike Shannon. I'm Mike Claiborne. I want to ask Ray Lankford. Ray Lankford, you played in Busch Stadium, as I mentioned, all-time leader in home runs when it was a canyon. I mean, the dimensions there when you played, and they moved the walls in once you left. But at that time, what was it, 414 to center?
For center was 414.
I mean, 386 to the power out. Yes. It was a brick wall.
Yes.
And when people see you, you know, you're not this big hulking guy. And, I mean, the home runs you hit there, you know, obviously, as I said, the all-time leader, when it was a real home run, throw in the fact that both you guys played on the AstroTurf, it was a whole different game then.
Oh, yeah. It was a total different game. I think back then, you know, in the 90s, you know, the Cardinal was all about guys that was gap hitters. So I was never considered a power hitter. And I don't think – and I didn't never expect it for myself to ever be a power hitter. I just always looked at hit line drives, put the ball in the gap, and just try to hit doubles and triples. That was my game. And I think over time and just spending time in the cage, you start to square the ball up a little more and start elevating it. And, you know, over time you get a little stronger. Mm-hmm. And they did move the ballparks in a little, you know,
it brought them in a little bit.
That helped out a little bit.
On the back end.
But at the end of the day, it just, I don't know. Just I was just never a power hitter, just always a gap hitter. And just over time, you just start figuring things out. You know, you spend a lot of time in a cage and you just, one day it's just click and you're like, okay.
You got
now,
it.
I got it.
Now I
got
to keep it.
Yeah. You just try to keep it in your mind. Yeah, like, okay, I figured it out. Exactly. You try to maintain it and just continue to elevate, you know, and that's what happened for me, and just turned into a different type of hitter.
Yeah, I think I was just blessed in, you know, in so many ways. You know, and number one is the blessing was that I was with the Cardinals, and because the Cardinals knew what type of team they was built around. I mean, they knew who it was with the head. It was Whitey, and Whitey had been having success when he was with Kansas City. All those years he was over there in that turf field. So when he came over here, you know, that kind of like migrated through the minor league system. So when you was coming up through the minor leagues, you knew how to just choke up, put the ball in play. And your job was not to have a ego and not try to lift and separate and try to hit home runs, because you'll be frying fish real soon, you know. So with that in mind, you know, we never felt overmatch. It was about competing. Once I had to face Doc Gooden or Nolan Ryan, I never felt with 2 strikes they had an advantage, because I had a plan. It was got to go choke up, spread out, and play pepper with the shortstop. You know, so with that in mind, we had success by making the opposition play a simple game of catch, but now they got to put a time limit on it. You know, so we understood our game, and being on turf was just the ultimate advantage for me, because when it was 100 degrees or 90, whatever it was on that turf, it gave me 3 or 4 steps. You know, catch me if you can. You knew I was going, first, second pitch, you know. Mm-hmm. So I felt that my only – If it was a problem by getting on base, once I got on base, I figured I couldn't be stopped.
Who was the guy that hit behind you? Mostly.
Ozzie.
Ozzie. Okay.
I say majority of the time was Ozzie, because every time I look at a highlight, Ozzie's taking you. Know? So, I remember my first day in the big leagues, Terry was there. I stole second. Now I'm getting ready to go to third three times. He fouled the ball off. You know, I'm like, TP, come on, man.
What you want, man?
Yeah, I'm trying to stay. And then the next night, I say, TP, man, I'm going. You know I'm going. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you right now, I'm going first or second pitch. I'm going. So he did it again. So I think third game, he moved TP to psych six and put Ozzie at second. So,
You know, they showed a video highlight of with you, Ray. They show a few of your home runs, but they show the collision at home plate with Darren Dalton, which changed his career completely. Is again a different game. You can't do that anymore. But he was, would you say, yeah, he was kind of in the way.
He was in the way, and it was a hot day, hot summer day. And the thing about that, Mike, is when the ball was hit, I thought it was going to right field, so I ran through the stop sign. But once I committed, I had to keep going. And I knew in the back of my mind, if I didn't score, I wasn't going to hear the end of it. And it worked out for us. I looked like a hero, but it was actually a base running mistake.
It worked out for everybody. But Dalton.
Yeah.
Exactly. He's the only guy that didn't work
exactly.
out.
But did you feel it? You know, my body was a little sore the next day, but I didn't let anybody know at that time.
Oh, you couldn't afford to admit that. And I'll ask all three of you guys when you play. You couldn't be in the trainer's room and expect to stay up in the big leagues, could you?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
They had about
you
five
had to really
guys
be hurting.
Just waiting for
just,
you, right?
Yeah, and that was at least five, okay? Yeah.
And the thing about that, Mike, when I was in the minor leagues, I played every game from A ball to AA, AAA, instructional ball. I started every game.
Yeah, but nobody took a day off.
I didn't take a day off. Because,
no one
because
did.
In the back, of my, the back of my mind, I knew if I took a day off, some guy fill in for me, have a good game. Now I'm sitting on the bench and lost my job. Right?
Say hello to Wally
so
Pitt.
I'm like, exactly. So I'm like, no, I'm playing every day. You know, I think the thing about it, people have to learn the difference between being hurt and being sore. And I think a lot
everybody's
of times.
Everybody's going to be
sore.
You're
going to always be sore. You're never going to be 100%.
Gino will give you some Advil.
Something. Some Aleve and keep it.
And
hey, you got to take some Aleve and keep it going.
Go get them.
Yeah.
Your 70% is better than anyone else's 100%.
Yeah.
That's what Gino tell you.
Yep.
He played that mind. How you feel, David? Man, I'm broke. You're 70%.
Exactly.
And you know,
you're right.
And you know what? You guys, you know, there's so many people that obviously had an impact on your careers. Mm-hmm. But the trainers and the clubhouse guys, those guys had a real impact on you guys being able to pick yourselves up and play when you probably didn't want to, because they'd say a subtle thing, and you guys had Buddy Bates, you had Butch Ackerman.
You didn't have anything to do but stay at the ballpark because couldn't afford to go any other place, and you couldn't afford to eat, or you couldn't afford anything. You know, you had especially if you were married and had kids. I remember we had a guy in the minor league. He got fined $100, okay? And he only made $100 a month. So anyway, we all had to pitch in so he could take some money home. You know, he was married and had a baby, and we had pitched in. And so his wife said, well, how come you didn't bring the check? He said, I cashed it on the way home.
Let's take another break. We'll come back. Ray Langford, Vince Coleman, and Mike Shannon. We're all here at the ballpark on the Cardinals Radio Network.
Now, back to Live with Mike, sponsored by Goodwill. Give hope, give local, give Goodwill.
Welcome back, everybody. We continue with Vince Coleman, Ray Langford, and Mike Shannon. We're having a really good old off-the-air conversation.
California boy.
I know.
we're back, Vince.
Yeah. You know me.
Yeah, hello. So, for you guys, we talked about the induction and everything. What's your most prominent, famous memory you have about putting that uniform on and what you did in it? And both you guys have had some incredible feats in your career.
I can remember being here my first year and as we started the jail and, you know, the bullpen was coming through by committee, and we start getting that sense of feel throughout the atmosphere, and I think, you know, with Red Cheney's around, you know, the Hall of Famer, but then when you see Lou Brock and Bob Gibson, and you know, those was things that you inspired you more than anything else, because we knew, and it's Stan Musial, you mm-hmm. know what I mean, to see him around every day, and they enjoyed, you know, watching us play the game, and you want to emulate or duplicate things that they did, you know, and I'm trying to be like Lou Brock, you know what I mean, my setting the world on fire and stealing bases every time I can, and it was just the atmosphere that we created that really, really propelled the fact that we was consistent in all areas, and when you have that consistency, you win ball games, and, you know, but Whitey, you know, led us to the point where that we could We felt that we could win every ball game. You know, whenever we stepped on the field, we felt we could win every ball game, and that was just the energy that was throughout our locker room, throughout our dugout, and it never let up.
And the other team knew it, too.
Exactly.
You would walk on the field,
exactly.
And you would be very humble and very kind to them, you know. But
right.
you knew you could beat them, and they knew it, which was even better.
Right.
I mean, you know, I can remember we'd go into a town. Well, 2 days before we got there, they'd be thinking about Brock, you know, to keep right. Brock off base, and they couldn't keep him off base.
And I say that because, you know, when you retire now, you like, and you hear like Sutcliffe, Rick Rowe, and Doc Gooden talking, you know, like, man, we hate it, you know, coming to play you guys, man, because, you know, you guys score 3-4 runs and hit the ball out the outfield.
Yeah, right.
And that's a lot of pressure, you know, knowing that if you didn't catch it right, you was. You know, didn't complete, make a catch. It was a lot of pressure, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to ask Mike to talk about a play that we may not ever see again. When he and Willie combined to steal, what, about 9 bases on one play?
in Chicago?
Chicago, right.
Yeah,
Chicago, right.
Yeah, it
right.
was unbelievable. I was doing a play-by-play, and it said, he's coming, and he's going, well, he's going this one. I mean, what did you guys, stolen?
4 bases on one play.
Yeah, on yeah. one play, you know. And we're at third and like at home.
It was going for the record, for the rookie record that mm-hmm. needed 76. And it was late in the ball game, and when I'm teaching base stealing, I'm saying, okay, the catcher had the cliff notes. He's giving the signs. And when he sets up on the corners, they're fastballs. If he sets up in the middle of the plate, they're off-speed pitches. Now, I knew this particular pitch was going to be a fastball. And normally when there's a left-handed batter, I do not steal third base. But he was a one-looker. It was Sats Anderson. So and Jody Davis, probably one or two catchers that I respected. But I knew at that time I had to I didn't tell him that. But, you know.
You can tell him now. It's okay.
But taunted him also. I mean, when you would come. I know Brock did.
He was talking. He was.
Well, I'm going to go on the first pitch or the second pitch, but
I would say that to certain catchers, you know.
Yeah, right.
Like Pudge Rodriguez. First time I saw him, you know, I'm in the American League, and I come up to bat, and he speaks to me. So you heard of me, huh? Now, who was pitching at the time was Chris Carpenter, not the Chris Carpenter here. Remember
yeah.
Chris Carpenter
yeah,
we
remember,
had?
Yeah.
So I came up with Chris Carpenter, you know, in the minor leagues. 2 years, you know, so I knew his tendencies, his tip.
The Chris Carpenter out of Georgia?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The punter.
Okay.
He was the punter. Right, right.
Okay,
so
yeah.
Now I knew his – he didn't have a move, but he had a flinch in his delivery when he was going home. I knew that. I steal second, steal third on 2 consecutive pitches on Pudge my next time at bat. I said, Pudge, how's your arm?
I'm amazed you didn't get hit, boy. I'm amazed guys didn't throw at you, boy.
No, but –
they didn't want to throw at him because if they hit him,
yeah,
then he's on base. He's going to steal
right.
be at third.
Yeah, I remember when I stole third and I couldn't catch the corner of the base. And it was those bases there, they was the one that was kind of had a bull nose edge. Now, you look at the bases here, they got a big, they high edge crowns where I can grab
sure.
the base. I slid off. And my instinct was just to get up and go because I couldn't go back to the base because Ron
right.
Say was there. Now I'm in a rundown. Mm-hmm. Now the pitcher was supposed to go home. Scott Sanderson came to third base, so that left nobody at home plate. But the funniest part about mm-hmm. that play is that when Willie is at third base and now they arguing and going on, and Willie just took off and went home.
Next thing you know, he's not there.
Stolen
yeah.
bases, but
Ray, for you, you had some really good seasons, but you played with some good players too on some of the teams that you were part of. Who were some of the guys as you look back, you came to appreciate more after you had a chance to play with them?
Well, when I was called up in '90, I think 91, 92, 93 were kind of tough years because we had some veteran guys towards the that were late in their careers, and you know. But I think one of the things was with Danny Cox and John Tudor and those guys. You learned a lot from them because they communicate Bob Tewksbury. Even though we weren't winning games, I think one of the things was it was just the fact that the fans were still coming out and they were still supporting us, and it was St. Louis,
right?
So it just make you grind and work that much harder. But once we turned things around by 95, I had opportunity to play with some much better players, younger players, with Brian Jordan, Albert Pujols. Then he made the trade and got, Ron Gant came over and he made the trade and got Mark McGuire. So I had the opportunity to play with a lot of great talented players. And, I think one of the things was, and Reggie Sanders, I think one of the things you learn from one another, no matter how many years you play in the big league, every player brings something different to the table.
But you mentioned three or four guys that really know how to play the game.
Yeah, you know how to play the game.
Reggie Sanders.
And let's throw Bernard Gilkey in there.
Bernard Gilkey. Yeah. Because when we came up, it was myself and Bernard Gilkey. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things was is we pushed one another. And at that time, we had Todd Zeal. He was a catcher, and they moved him to first base. No, they moved him to third
base. Yeah.
Then eventually over to first. But I Gilkey and I came up through the minor leagues, and it was a good thing for both of us because we pushed one another. We worked out together. We was in the cage at the same time. I knew his swing. He knew my swing. So I think that's kind of the thing probably with Vince and Willie had or Ozzy. They knew each other's swing. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you can't see what's going on in your swing, but your teammate can see it. It might say, hey, this is what you're doing different now compared to last week.
And I guarantee you, does that go on today's game?
Do we sit around and
talk about the game?
You know what? You see it a little bit more with this team, but I think because there's so many – first of all, I think that guys have spent too much time in the cage. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's some guys that aren't coachable where this is how I do it. No matter what you tell them.
Yeah, they're stubborn. They don't want to change.
Exactly. Let's take our final break. We're going to come back and finish up with Ray and Vince and Mike here on the Cardinals Radio Network.
Now, back to Live with Mike, sponsored by Goodwill. Give hope, give local, give Goodwill.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Vince, Ray, and Mike Shannon here at the ballpark. I always nip him at the bud. All right, we ask this question to everybody. Who did you have the paperwork on where you owned him, and who owned you?
The paperwork. Well, I thought that every pitcher has a tendency, flaws in their tempo, their timing, so it was quite a few left-handers with Frank Viola, Tom Browning, Sid Fernandez. I mean, so the list goes on and on about left-handers, you know. So the guys who gave me trouble was Terry Mulholland. You know, he was quick, had a great step-off move. But I didn't think that anyone was capable of stopping me. They just tried to contain me. You know, if they had a really good move, then I'd go into a delay steal. When I got to second base, it was basically stealing off the catcher more than anything else. So it wasn't that a pitcher could really stop me. You know, I just thought more that if I did my homework and studied going into that ball game, because, you know, for me, the knowledge that I had that I passed it on, and, you know, Willie will tell you that made him more confident, you know, once he got on base, you know. So, and that's all you want to have with some confidence once you got on base, because once you knew a pitcher's move, there was nothing they could do about it.
You ever hear Willie talk about Lou Brock? He said, I love Lou Brock, he says, but he come out and he said he took a lead off and he had a ruler. He said, he lost me right there.
He said he lost me right there. It was an 80.
He said, I love him, but
he said he had a tape measure at a clipboard. He said, I knew I was in trouble. I never seen that on a baseball diamond. Right, Ray, what about you?
The guy that gave me the toughest time, and I think he probably gave a lot of guys a tough time, was Pedro Martinez. I just could not hit him. I don't care.
You didn't see it?
I couldn't see it. It was like, I mean, he just had like 12 different pitches.
Who was the guy? You sent a chauffeur for to the ballpark to bring to the ballpark?
Danny Grave. I think whenever we played Cincinnati, I hit all those guys. Mm-hmm. It's just certain teams, Pittsburgh. But it just depends. I don't think it was, other than Pedro Martinez. I think most guys just depends how.
He had
how
a lot of people.
Yeah, he had a lot of people. I just think it was about how I felt that day. And if the pitcher just got lucky and I just wasn't on my game. But, go to the cage, the next guy you come and get. It's always the guy that wasn't really established that gave me the toughest time.
You know, I hear that. Like, how many people have we heard
that? That's why
from?
Our pitchers are so good right now. They're young and nobody's seen them before. And they're still hard.
When you face challenging the batter, like your Smoltz and guys like that are established, you start figuring them out a little bit. And they get you one game, and then next time you face them, you get them. So it kind of goes back and forth. But there's always these guys that,
soft tosses.
You go back to the dugout like, how did he get me out? How did that happen?
Comfortable
yeah.
collar.
Yeah, exactly.
You scratching your head.
You wish you could get him again. Well, and then you think about it.
You can't wait to get back up there and you're 0-9.
They have so much data now. I mean,
information is incredible.
Too much.
Exactly. Yeah. Spin rate and launch angle, so tell you the velocity and all that stuff.
The thing was, and probably the same with you, is that you just went in the video room and they just had that one tape.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
That's all you saw.
Right.
And the next thing nowadays, they got
they can break down everything.
This and that,
Did you know what a two-seamer was? A four-seamer?
No, I just thought it was the same pitch.
Yeah, it was a fastball. Right, yeah. Wanted to do was go up there and hunt a strike. So you're talking about who was tough on me for his pitching-wise, guys that spin the ball, keep you off balance, change speeds. Dennis Martinez, change speeds. Big Daddy Russell.
I saw him last week.
Big Daddy Russell. He puts you in a slump, where he changed speeds.
How do you know what's a two-seamer and what's a four-seamer?
I don't know.
I called it a cutter.
We just look at him.
If it was straight, it was a fastball, and if it moved, it was a cutter.
Right. What you're trying to do is hunt or strike. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you got a box up there, and if it's in the strike, don't care what it is. Where it's moving. If it's in the strike, hit it. That's why you learn to hit strikes.
Yeah.
The great San Diego hitter, okay?
Tony Gwynn.
I asked him, I said, you see the ball better in the daytime? You see the spin on the ball? He said, no. He said, I just see something white. I said, well, no wonder I couldn't hit. I mean, here's a guy that led the league. He broke Musial's record leading the league. And I asked him, because I could see the ball a lot better in the daytime because I could see the spin on the ball. But he said, I just look for something white. I asked a pitcher, when you mentioned him, I won't say it, but I asked him, I said, how do you pitch Tony Gwynn? He said, I throw it right down the middle and keep it down so he doesn't hit it out of the park and hopefully hits the first pitch. It saves me 4 or 5 pitches because I know he's going to get 65 hits. Mm-hmm.
Well, you had certain guys like, I think, Ozzy, Jose Aquindo. They swung a big bat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think they just try to slap it. I don't know.
Well, mine wasn't that big. But
yeah, I swung a normal size bat, 34, 32. Some of the guys,
you'd be amazed at how few guys swing at 34 anymore. It's 32, 31.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ounces?
Yeah.
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 I mean, it's amazing. Yeah. Now, you get some of the – and it's the little guy who wants to put 34, 35 in his hand. But the big guys, man, they don't swing it like they used to. And that's one of the other things about the game that's changing. Mike, you played in there with Richie Allen, and he swung a 42. And now, guys,
Yeah, but he was a man enough to swing.
He pound for pound might have been one of the strongest guys you'll ever see.
Right.
Best player you ever played against?
I say Barry Bonds, hands down.
I'm going Barry.
I mean, he's a complete player.
And the reason why I say Barry is – Like Vince just said, complete player, played defense, took away runs because he got the ball in quick. I don't know if he had the strongest arm, but he was quick.
He got it in quick,
yeah, exactly. And, of course, what he did offensively, so I would have to say Barry Bonds.
That'd probably be another guy, Mike, that you just throw it down the middle and let him hit it because fooling with him for 7 or 8 pitches.
Well, When you try to assess him from going back 20 or 30 years, nobody challenged him. They just put him on. They didn't even mess with him.
Yep.
And that was unusual.
Yeah, it was smart.
I got to ask you this quick. Tell the Whitey story about being in L.A. with the fly ball.
It was my second road trip. And were you there, Ray? I mean, No. You wasn't there. You was a rookie. No.
He was watching you on TV at the time.
What confused me, I was in right field. So we still had Lonnie Smith then. Mm-hmm. You know, we still had Lonnie and left. Yeah. And
you was in right
Willie
then.
Center, and I'm in right. And, you know, as a kid, back in Florida, all you saw was the big red machine, or you saw Dodger Stadium, you know. So here I am, rookie in right field, Dodger Stadium. You know, can't believe it. I'm in the big leagues in Dodger Field, and it was a fly ball, like first inning, you know, hit to me. And so I'm camped on it, and all of a sudden it was a blink. I mean, I didn't see nothing. Dropped the ball, right? So now I come and sit out at the very end of the bench because I'm like, man, he gonna send me back down to the minor leagues. I'm dropping a fly ball. You got to be kidding me. So now I feel Whitey's coming. You're not, oh, my God, he's coming
you
down.
You can't run. He can't hide.
Yeah, so he's coming, walking towards me. And I was like, he said, Vince, that ball take a bad hop?
But you know, right away he relaxed you, you know.
Exactly, they was like relax you. You know? Yeah, so sure. Now I was like, oh man, that was great to hear. You know,
tell you what, we played against the Tigers in the World Series, and Maris couldn't hit the left-hander that they had.
Mickey Lolich.
Okay, so he told Randy, said, I can't hit Lolich. So he had a kid named Ron Davis. He put him in right field. In the first inning, he got hit right in the head with a fly ball. He said, Roger, get your glove. He said, you know you're going to go overboard, you know, but he had to play.
Gentlemen. It was one more story that this was later on, like maybe, this is like my third year maybe. I'm in right field.
Again.
and I drop a fly ball again.
Again.
So Whitey say, boy, you need your eyes checked. So we go to the doctor the next day, and I get dilated, right? And now, thinking I went in the morning that I'd be ready to play that night, my eyes didn't come back. And I had to miss 2 days of not playing because my eyes, whatever dye they put in, they put some heavy doses in there.
You got extra large. Well, gentlemen, we are out of time.
We want you to fax those speeches to us.
Though. Yeah. Let us take a look at it to know how long we're going to be there tomorrow. Yeah. And make sure our names are included.
If you hear me back, they're going, psh.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Time.
Well, if you turn around, nobody's sitting there anymore, then you don't know. You went a little too long.
We're going to have some fun tomorrow.
More importantly, we've known you guys since you broke in and couldn't be happier for you. It's great to be part of this and long time coming, and I know for Mike, we just couldn't be more happy for
you. But you guys were elected by the fans.
Yeah, and the fans. Okay. So what would you have to say to the fans tonight as we wrap things up?
Oh, man, the fans are the best. Just as a player and just them voting for me, and they always been supportive of me and my family, I just want to say thank you. I am definitely humbled and grateful for this opportunity, and I'm looking forward to tomorrow. I can't wait, man. I'm excited. And I'm gonna keep my speech.
Are you going first?
I don't know. I don't know who's going first.
You don't know yet.
But I'm gonna keep it a good 5 minutes. Four or five minutes is good.
Alphabetical order, guys.
Let's see. Four or five minutes.
Nobody.
I know Vince's gonna do about 15.
Yeah. Well, he got to thank himself first, and then after that, he's got to thank some other people along the way. But fellas, couldn't be happier for what you guys have coming tomorrow. It's gonna be fun to watch you put that red jacket on.
Thank you.
And we've all been friends for years, and this is the epitome of what it is to be about what the Cardinals are all about.
But I want to see that ring tomorrow.
Mike, you better not wear that ring, man. You don't deserve it.
Hey, I did my part. I left. For Vince Coleman, for Ray Langford, for Mike Shannon, I'm Mike Claiborne. We thank you for listening to another edition. This has been one of our fun ones for the night on the Cardinals Radio Network.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.